Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, brought to you by BAE Systems. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DOD this week. I'm Jared Serbu. And this hour, we're going to take a deep dive into a topic we've covered in dribs and drabs over the last couple years, the Defense Department's move toward what it calls the Joint Information Environment. After years of planning and policy development, we're now starting to see several tangible examples of progress toward the JIE. This summer, there was the stand-up in Europe of the first Enterprise Operations Center, one of several that will eventually help manage joint DoD networks at an enterprise level. The Army and Air Force are working together to build some of the first pieces of JIE here in the continental U.S., including a major bandwidth upgrade based on multi-protocol label switching routers. We'll talk about those examples and several others this hour with two guests. Dave DeVries is the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. He's one of three members of the DoD Executive Committee that sets policy for JIE. And Brigadier General Brian Dravis is the Director of the JIE Technical Standardization Office, based at the Defense Information Systems Agency. DISA's handling the technical nuts and bolts of the JIE implementation. DeVries leads off our conversation, starting with an explanation of exactly what JIE is.
So the Department of Defense is undertaking the largest transformation of its type in the IT domain, or the information technology capabilities. Everything that we do within DoD depends upon the use of our networks and on our information technology devices to exchange information and to communicate with our mission partners as well as our own forces. Its success depends upon our leaders' ability to think quickly, decisively, and to take appropriate action, and it's on a very timely basis there. Part of that is the need to overcome the barriers to exchange information. Part of that has been set in place by policies. Some of that is how we have created our networks and built our information technology infrastructure over the years, incorporating the latest technologies, incorporating the latest practices of how you put it together, how you connect it, how you secure it, how do you operate it. And now we're looking at that and saying, we need to look at that whole structure. How do we reconnect it? How do I modernize it into the future to maintain the mission effectiveness, the ability of the commanders and the forces on the ground to exchange information while realizing a need to better improve the security of our information while maintaining or reducing the cost of operating that.
And as you kind of allude to, this is sort of an all-hands-on-deck effort, but there are also roles and responsibilities. I think it'd be useful for our listeners if each of you described a little bit the role you have individually and as the representative of the DoD CIO and the role DISA has and your role within DISA, General.
Sure.
So the Department of Defense Chief Information Office, and right now the Chief Information Officer is Ms. Terry Dakai. Her main role and responsibility is to set the policies for the department on all information technology, information management, and cybersecurity perspectives. And in that mission set, she has now been designated by the Deputy Secretary to lead this effort to bring about the joint information environment, which encompasses how do you change the infrastructure? How do you change the procedures of how we operate it? How do we defend it? Ultimately, the success of the warfighter and how they can exchange information. I'm one of her four deputies, and I'm also the tri-chair of the Joint Information Environment Management Group that is leading the effort on behalf of the whole department that is setting out the changes in both the governance piece, the operational side of the house of how we operate our networks, and three, how do we deal with the technical interfaces and the technical architectures. And in that half, we turn to our Defense Information Systems Agency, DISA, and General Director Dravis will talk about his role there.
Same question.
Great. So I'm the director of the JTSO, that is the Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office. I will tell you, when I first got this job, somebody told me, congratulations, how on earth are you ever going to fit that onto a business card? The way we do that is obviously with the military acronym and JTSO. So it's really tasked, my office is tasked with the overall technical and implementation lead for the JIE, so we develop, integrate, and synchronize the JIE technical plans, programs, capabilities, and execute a whole set of joint information environment-related tasks. In fact, the management construct spells out over 20 specified tasks that I'm personally responsible for, my office is responsible for. I won't walk through all of them, but some examples would be serving as the technical configuration manager, updating Mr. DeVries' executive committee through something called the PCC, the Planning and Coordination Cell, leading development of the Department of Defense technical specs that enable the joint information environment, and so on. And there's a multitude of others that apply out of the management construct. But the other real overarching responsibility that I have is to synchronize and coordinate and liaise with all the combatant commands, the services, and the agencies department-wide to make sure that their equities and their concerns and mission requirements are brought into the discussion and work done to deliver JIE to the department.
Stepping back a little bit, what are sort of the main focus areas of JIE right now as you're starting to move into implementation? What are the things that you're accomplishing now, and at some point once they're done, you'll say, we now have JIE?
So I think we've broken it down into probably two different ways of looking at it. One is we covered it into five large areas. And there are large efforts that are underway there. One is reducing our total infrastructure of our core computing centers or our data centers. We're underway within the military departments and the components to reduce that from nearly 2,000 different data centers down to something much more manageable, fewer than 800 across the global thing, and focusing really on less than 20 core data centers, which is going to house the majority of our information. The second one is the network optimization, the normalizing of our networks so that we operate them more standard and we know how they're secured and we provide a better security thing to it while reducing the cost of it. And that's what General Dreyfus was talking about there. The third one was on changing the focus, if you will, from how do we build systems and separate networks and use more of thinking about the information that's going across as data. How do I secure that data? How do I then exchange that data based upon your identity and your ability or your authority to get to that data and to share it? So we've used a lot of terms lately about the insider threat and how do I secure my information. So we're looking at that from the identity piece and how do I control the access to the information. And then the fourth one that is coming along is the governance piece, is how do you control what the services and components have been building and operating to date, and how do you shift that over time into a more unified practice of buying it, putting it together, and operating it. And that's going to be the hardest part, is as we change our procedures on how we operate things, because we all grew up operating it independently. And just tell me where I can connect in, and I'll just exchange you my one email. We're way beyond that now. It is the IT and the ability to exchange information is in the lifeblood of every single facet of DoD. And then finally is changing the culture that says, I'm just going to go down to my local store and buy this application. It's now, what do you need to share your information with? Let me buy that at the enterprise level and provide it to you as a service, whether I contract out for it or if I maintain it inside my thing. And so we're going to rely more on the use of enterprise services to handle the common needs for the members of DoD.
And to that culture point, I mean, one thing that's been talked about a lot in this process, I think, is that this has gotten some very, very high-level buy-in, I think, all the way up to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. When it comes to getting everybody pointed in the same direction, how important was that, you know, especially in an area that's historically been as diffuse and as stovepiped as IT in the department?
Absolutely critical.
It really is a paradigm shift for the department, in my view. I've worked a lot of other projects and previous assignments here to the National Capital Region. This one, in its size, shape, scope, and significance to the department, I think can't be understated. Mr. DeVries, I think, has provided an excellent answer in the proper context. At the same time, in my role as that director of the JTSO, I'm working directly with each of those services and hearing from them about their concerns and, again, trying to make it work for the Air Force, the Marines, the Army, and the Navy. And they all have very specific and legitimate concerns based on the mission assignments they have within their military departments. That's real. So that's part of the challenge, is transitioning from our status quo into that to-be Joint Information Environment that does all the things that Mr. DeVries has spelled out. I've been here about 120 days or so. My first order of business was try to get everybody headed to one cardinal heading. I'm an Air Force guy, so let's all go north, and then let's refine the heading, you know, from that one cardinal heading on the compass. I will tell you my view and my experience in the 120 days is everybody is really working sincerely, conscientiously to get in that one singular direction, to be into this one singular environment. At the same time, nobody in this department is shy about expressing their requirements and their equities. So that's sort of the tension between both ends of trying to work this from a service-specific endpoint or a Department of Defense CIO standpoint.
That is Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Standardization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. Also talking with Dave DeVries this week. He's the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise, as we explain the Joint Information Environment and what's next. We'll come back and talk more after our first break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Welcome back to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, talking about the Joint Information Environment in the Defense Department this week and the department's progress toward that end state. Our guests are Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the director of the JIE Technical Standardization Office at DISA, and Dave DeVries, the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. We started the show in our first segment talking about exactly what JIE is and the reasons behind it. One of those reasons might be financial.
How much has budget pressure played a role in the impetus to do this? Just the idea that, you know, maybe we can't all afford to keep doing things our own way and duplicating each other's work?
I think the budget constraints has definitely enabled this and supported this thing. Every good crisis helps bring out the best there. But I think it's the right thing to do, too, because, again, if you look at your own family situation, if you have unlimited funds, you really don't control what you actually buy. When the funds become less and less, you really focus on what do I really need to spend my money on. In the case of the information technology, for years we have built it up based upon what your requirements were and you getting your own set of money to pay for it. Now we need to look at how do I use common services and common transport and not everyone building their own thing or putting out their own contract for that service.
I want to get a little bit into the governance piece that you talked about. And I want you to tell me if I'm wrong, but from my outside perception is that there's been a little bit of a change in tone as we've moved down the road on this a little bit. You know, a couple years ago, Mr. Kai, who you mentioned, the CIO, would go to public events and say things like, you know, we can't force culture change here. We can't tell people that they're going to go to enterprise email, for example. They have to do it when they're ready. And yet a couple weeks ago, we saw a memo saying, you're all going to enterprise email. Has this become more of a top-down directed process and less of a consensus one as we move down this path?
I would tell you that what is coming out is more directed guidance to no kidding, create your plans and come and discuss what your challenges are, so that we together as a corporate board, if you will, can look at those things and decide where to go with it. Because each of the services, whether I deal with enterprise service or consolidating my networks or changing how I collect my intelligence data, they are all facing their own budget constraints and they must make those decisions based upon where I'm at right now with my current IT and my other priorities, and where am I trying to move to as a department whole. And again, the Army is the largest force and most spread out over the continental United States. They have a larger footprint to worry about than, say, the Navy, which has more ships to think about than they do actual installations in CONUS to make the standardization there. So you're finding that the memo that Mr. Kai signed out is one of several that are coming down the pike that you'll see that will lay out, I want you to create a plan. Tell me what your plan is over this thing. We're not saying you must execute it and be on this thing within a period of time. It is, what is your plan to consume this enterprise capability or do this particular action here?
That question about budgetary pressures, a real one. It's a fact of life in the fiscal environment in which we face in the Defense Department. It's real for all services across the board, and it's not unique to this subject. and the evolution to the joint information environment. So all services face that, and they are just dealing with that across the board. But this is a good case where I think the department has got it really fundamentally right. They are taking an approach that does the three things that they say they want to get out of it, which is increased security, better effectiveness, better efficiency. If you look at that Defense Enterprise email alone, the Army has ported over or moved over roughly 1.4 million or so folks, and their estimate is $76 million savings in FY12 by moving over to that enterprise email system. Now, when you compound that across the Defense Department, eventually transitioning everybody to that joint information environment, capitalizing on those enterprise services, the department will realize significant savings.
Enterprise email is one of those enterprise services, but I think DISA as a whole is kind of in the process of reshaping itself into the enterprise service provider writ large for the department, for not just email, but a lot of other things. Talk a little bit about how DISA is changing and some of the new roles that you're taking on.
Sure. Under the leadership of Lieutenant General Ronnie Hawkins, he is really working aggressively to ensure that DISA as an agency does in fact deliver and provide those enterprise level services to the joint information environment. Enterprise email is the first most obvious example. Not just the Army, but other components within the DoD. In fact, the OSD has recently transitioned into DEE, and others are soon to follow. You talked about Ms. Takai's memo. The other areas that they're looking at are this issue of MPLS, or multi-protocol label switching, mesh, building out what's called the DISN core, the backbone of fiber links that through which all of the communications will travel. Ms. Takai also had a memo that talked about identifying the DISA data storage centers, or DECs, in CONUS as JIE core data centers. And there's pilots ongoing now within DISA on mobile wireless devices and applications and the rest. In fact, there's 16 out there now in a pilot, 39 more apps under review, and 44 more requested. So there's a lot of movement and effort. It takes time, obviously, and commitment of resources and money, talent, to move that along. But General Hawkins is very focused on doing exactly that and pioneering this path to get his agency and the rest of the DoD down the evolution into the joint information environment.
Yeah, let's talk some more about some of the things that are actually happening on the ground that tell us that JIE is not just an ethereal concept out there. You mentioned core data centers. Let's expand a little bit more on that. What are those data centers, which are mostly going to be in DISA decks, I believe? What's their role and what's coming into them from what's currently out there?
So let me take that out from the DoD CIO perspective, because sure. We kind of looked across the whole span of the global presence of DoD. We kind of tiered things. And we said, I want to put my crown jewels in these data centers that I can put the money into, protect them, and to connect them to what I would call the super highways, so that the information that is stored there is secure and it can be shared out and used by the whole global presence of our force as well as our mission partners. But then you also take a step back and say, but I need to keep some kind of processing capability at a large installation, because each of our installations in itself is bigger than a lot of cities today, and there's a lot of processing that takes place today in many different buildings and many different locations on that installation. We're going to put those into known buildings there where I know what my cost of ownership is, and I can secure it there. And so we're going to minimize those data centers too. And then we have some unique data centers that will provide some specialized missions. Rather than them being scattered all over the place, we're going to know where they are and then protect them accordingly, and then use that data from there. So that's the overarching construct of the data center strategy. And the core data centers are how do you move the global-facing applications into there and operate them uniformly, consistently, and securely, and so that the user knows how to pay for that service and support it there.
Yeah, and to that end, I mean, as we reduce and consolidate and collapse the number of data centers that are out there, I think Mr. DeVries said 2,000 to around 800 or so, whatever that in-state number becomes, that only robusts and better secures the joint information environment. Now you have that many fewer data sets and stores that you have to defend from a defensive cyber operational standpoint. But to your exact question, we are days away here as we tape this from making a recommendation to Mr. DeVries' executive committee about the next capability upgrade in Europe. as part of that fielding, which is a core data center. And so we're working through the challenges of what that thing looks like, what gets stored in it. We're working with the Combatant Command and the services in Europe to identify the applications and items and data that will be resident in it, working with the commander of the Enterprise Operations Center, how he and his team are going to manage it. And so that recommendation, again, will go to Mr. DeVries and his tri-chaired committee. And assuming approval there, we'll have that next brick in the road. And as Mr. DeVries said, we're really sort of building the on-ramp, good metaphor and analogy, into that joint information environment. Probably a poor metaphor, but I look at it like bricks in the road. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten through an initial operating capability in the Enterprise Operations Center over in Germany supporting EUCOM and AFRICOM. That's a brick. The core data center becomes another brick. We don't build brick roads anymore, but you get the idea is that we got to lay these things in so that eventually the services can evolve and transition into what eventually will become the GIA.
I want to talk more about that EUCOM IOC in just a minute, but before we leave the data centers, you know, I totally get the security benefits of having that reduced attack surface, but do you also create potential vulnerabilities when you bring so many IT eggs into so few baskets, as it were? I mean, once you've got so much stuff in these relative handful of centers, they really can't go down because of a cyber attack or a kinetic attack or whatever.
So there's two more facets to that thing. One is, by the term core data center, behind that is a whole layer of security that we put into that. And we've defined zones, if you will, where you put particular applications and or data sets. And that in itself provides another layer of defense, if you will, or security. Two, as I said before, the core data centers are our crown jewels. So the inherent definition in there is that I'm going to be replicating or backing up my data, if you will, from this core data center with another one. So a core data center does not become an island to itself. That's where I'm investing my dollars into providing that security and that capability. And that's where it all comes down to play. I can't afford that at 800 data centers. Right. I can't afford that at less than 20 data centers, my core data centers. Mm.
Yeah, so part of the engineering design and plan for this is exactly what Mr. DeVries described. But in addition to these core data centers we're designing, building right now, as a matter of fact, something called an IPN or installation processing node, that'll serve down at some of these installation-sized sites that in many cases are bigger than some civil municipalities. And so they'll have some data resident there as well. And so we'll have schema in place that will secure these installation processing nodes. They'll secure the core data centers. There'll be provisions for failover in case, you know, there's a thunderstorm and power goes out and backup power is taken away or whatever scenario you care to provide, so that the fielded forces out there have the information and data that they need when and where they need it.
Brigadier General Brian Dravis is the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Standardization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. He's one of two guests helping us explain JIE and where we are in the department's progress toward that one unified IT environment. The other is Dave DeVries. He's the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. They'll both be back with us to talk more after another break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbid. We are back on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Our topic this week, the joint information environment in the Defense Department. We've got two guests to talk about it. Dave DeVries, the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise, and Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the Director of the JIE Technical Standardization Office based at DISA.
Let's go back to EUCOM for a couple minutes. As you said, the stand of this operations center, a big brick in the road, and I think the first such center of many still to come. Why was EUCOM / AFRICOM the right place to start with these?
So one of the things that we talked about here was that we're changing the way we look at our information technology, the structure and how we operate it. As we were putting forth the design criteria for it and how we wanted to operate it, we had to test it out. And the services and the components felt strongly about that, saying, okay, I can see this big plan here. How can we do like a little exercise on it and make sure it's really going to work and that it's going to pay off the dividend that we think it is in terms of effectiveness and security. So we gave a couple of scenarios, and Europe is an area that we, DoD, have had a presence for many years. But over the last few years, as our national priorities have been changing, we've been reducing our footprint in Europe. And so it's a natural thing of taking a look at what we have there as we have to reduce our infrastructure anyway and test out some of these things. Two, there's been a large effort underway there for the past 3 or 4 years to do just that thing, testing out not only how you put it together, but also how you operate it and securely. So that's why that became a kind of a natural thing of just trying it out, and then I can roll it to the other areas and ultimately reach the global aspect here.
Is it too early to say what you've learned from that so far, what you were wrong about, what you were right about, how you're going to plow that into future centers going forward?
Yeah, I would describe the learning curve as actually quite steep and ongoing. And so I can give you a couple of quick examples. The commander over there in the European EOC, an army colonel, has brought his team together. It's about 70 folks, combination of military, civilian, and contractors that provide 24/7, 365 monitoring of the JIE environment as it is growing and maturing in the European and AFRICOM theaters of operation. And they've also capitalized on these events that we call DISA mini flags that take place down here at Stafford Quantico, hosted by the Marine Corps and the Defense Department Information Assurance Range. Out of both the standup of the EOC and the most recent DISA mini flag, there's been about 34 plus specific lessons learned in TTPs, techniques, tactics, procedures, that have come out of that. And a very real example is that today on the ground in Europe, that Army 06 commander daily coordinates and works with Air Force commanders at RAF Molesworth and Air Force commander at RAF Alconbury and the Air Force Net Operations Center in San Antonio on monitoring of traffic and status for those circuits and bases in the United Kingdom. We're looking to expand that, grow that aperture and footprint and level of responsibility, and that's some of the things that we hope to achieve early in 14.
And that's obviously one of those theaters where there's a lot of interdependence with coalition partners. There used to be this concept called Future Mission Network. Is that still alive and well? Has that been folded into JIE? Where does that stand? How are we going to handle coalition networking going forward?
So Future Mission Network came about from our efforts during the many years in Afghanistan and Iraq and the need to connect our coalition partners together to share the information. And we learned lessons of how to do that. We overcame a lot of both technical as well as policy-related issues in doing that in the Afghanistan Mission Network. And we took those things and probably about 3 years ago said, we're going to call it the Fusion Mission Network and look at how we're going to do it in the future side. Today, that is called the Mission Partner Environment, which is a subset of the Joint Information Environment, because it prescribes and describes our need to exchange the information with our mission partners, whether they be other international countries or even our non-governmental organizations here as we respond to disaster events and that kind of stuff.
And it's part of the idea that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time we go into a new contingency environment.
Exactly.
Yes, but let me just sort of put a fine point on that to help describe the complexity. So yes, Mr. DeVries is exactly correct that mission partner environment is where we are going with JIE. And it was recently exercised over there in UCOM in a combined endeavor exercise. And so we're coordinating with the folks there in Europe, but we're looking at that and their concerns in Europe, but we're also looking at the PACOM concerns as we start to shift our focus and begin some implementation activities in that AOR. And the concerns in PACOM are not necessarily close, let alone identical, to the concerns in the European theater. Yeah. And so I've talked to the National Guard, for example, and their concerns in their mission partner environment extends out to 3,000 armories in 54 states and territories, a state.gov domains that they have to connect to, and maybe even local law enforcement, disaster response kind of equities. And I just spent time with Transcom. And so they have commercial partners through which they must operate. So this gets very complex in a hurry when you start looking at the mission partner environment for the JIE. And I personally see that as a real challenge we've got to work through. And so I'm eager to get at that And I'm not sure that it will turn into be a one-size-fits-all mission partner environment in the in-state.
That's Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the director of the JIE Technical Standardization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency, one of two people we're talking to this week who are deeply involved in the management and implementation of the Joint Information Environment. Dave DeVries is our other guest. He is Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. They'll both join us for some closing thoughts after one final break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. We're back on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu, talking about the Joint Information Environment this week with two guests, Dave DeVries, the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise, and Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the Director of the JIE Technical Standardization Office that's based at the Defense Information Systems Agency.
Back to the big picture, one of the talking points I've heard a lot that we haven't heard yet today is this is not a program of record. It has no budget. You're basically using tech refresh money that's in a lot of little pots scattered all over the place and using that to kind of converge everybody gradually, but hopefully quickly, to one place. And yet that's not how the department internally has managed programs historically. It's not how outside overseers have maintained accountability over constructs or programs, whatever you want to call it. If I'm a taxpayer or an outside overseer, should I still have confidence that this thing is not going to get out of control, that there's some way to look at it as a whole and manage it effectively?
So we have not lost that ability to look at how the department looks at it requirements process and how it adjudicates the requirements. Then how do I bring those things to the market to say I need a solution, whether it be a procedural change or a commodity or a service to be provided to me to meet this requirement? That is still there. What is changed is how do I look at that from a holistic perspective? So again, as you said, JIE is not a program of record. It is not a single requirement that said, give me all your requirements, validate them through our requirements process here operated by the joint staff, and then go out and put out one large contract. It would never work. What we do have is we have created the information technology infrastructure and the capabilities to date through the various programs of record and even the non-programs of records as technology evolved, as it was made available, and we learned how to hook those things together. What we're doing in the JIE is defining what things make up that whole fabric, and then how do I align those things from a not only from how I buy them, but how I operate them, and then to the user, how he consumes that thing. He doesn't have to consume it from the thing that he owns. He can consume it from a provider that gives it to him. So that's a similar thing from both the intelligence community as well as the Department of Defense here and how we're aligning things here. You will see that as the acquisition technology and logistics undersecretary puts out direction, he's going to say, align your programs to consume this enterprise service, or as we go through contract reviews and program reviews, we'll say, why are you paying for, and maybe they're buying their own transport system for their own network, and we're going to say, don't buy your own, use this. And so we're going to be more draconian on how the program managers actually consume and use things rather than just letting them put their contracts out and whatever contract wins and they just go and buy it, because then I wind up with six roads going side by side from point A to point B.
I was just going to say, you know, when I first came here, that was one of the first questions I'd asked, because I'd worked in the NCR previously, and we're all accustomed in the Department of Defense to programs of record. We are very conversant and comfortable with that as a means to go about the business of fielding new capability within the Pentagon. And I was a little dubious when I first got here working this job, but I am a true convert now. I believe the department has it exactly right as an initiative to do all the things that Mr. DeVries just spelled out, to realize the capability faster, to get that effectiveness, efficiency, and security online because we need it, would be hindered by trying to make this a formalized program of record. So it, in some respects, I think may make it a little more challenging, but I think the end result will probably be more beneficial to the department.
on running things as an enterprise in IT, is that somewhat in conflict with the way legal requirements work under Title 10 for what the services need to do? Are you having to contort yourselves a little bit? Not saying it's the wrong thing to do to go to an enterprise model, but for example, with the MPLS router buy that you mentioned a little bit ago, an Army official explained to me last week that the way that they made it work was something along the lines of the Army bought the routers, then turned them over to DISA after DISA had handled the procurement with Army money, and then DISA then redelegates administrative authority back to the Army to run the routers for some limited purposes. This may be getting too far into the weeds, but my basic question is, are you having to be a little bit creative to stay within Title 10 requirements?
No. I think the art of that is in how do you interpret Title 10? I don't have it sitting here in front of me, but I think it says something to the order of the services shall equip, man, and train their forces to execute the missions assigned to them and on behalf of the Department of Defense. That in a nutshell is what I would call the layman's definition of Title 10. It does not say, and do this using only your money and building only your stuff that only you can operate on. That part is not in that Title 10 clause. So in the past, we've taken it to that extremes where we said, if I get money given to me from Congress to buy this and I'm wearing the Army uniform, I can't share it with my Air Force brethren. We're beyond that. The years of conflict, the years of operating together, the years of doing joint operations, and the need to reduce the budget, that has not come up in the past.
Next steps here. What are the key critical things that we're going to be watching going forward? What should we be watching for from the outside? And I think critically, you know, that final end state, is there a way to say what percentage of the way we are to it right now?
So what you're going to see coming up is we're about ready to release a joint information environment implementation guidance from the Department of Defense Chief Information Office. Mr. Takai will send that out shortly. It's going through the final legal review. That will go out to the services. And in there will be the direction to them to, you will create your plan of how you're going to implement this thing over the next 5 to 6, 7 years, given your position where you are on these different aspects and your budgetary positions, and to lay out what challenges you have in meeting that. So that's probably over the next 4 to 5 months or where they're going to come back with their plans, and we'll integrate those plans, and that will provide a better roadmap of where we're going to drive with capabilities over the next 3 to 4 years. You asked the question at the beginning of this, what about the leadership involvement? We just went through some more updates to both the military leadership as well as the civilian leadership in the department here, and we will keep coming back to them on a very frequent basis every 3 to 6 months to broaden this update. And in there will be the metrics that will lay out the progress.
To my earlier question, is there a way to say how much of the JIE exists today, how far down the road we are?
My perspective, JIE is a continuum. And, you know, it's ongoing. It's going to continue to ongo. It's going to continue to advance and accelerate. I think each success will capitalize and build upon each successive success. We are building those bricks in the road that we talked about earlier. There's just, frankly, work that has to be done. And all of this has to work for each respective service and combatant command all along this continuum of path to get whatever the end state will be. Nobody's going to throw a switch on a certain date and say, okay, now we're at JIE. But at some point, we're going to say, gosh, you know, all the core tenets of JIE are in place in Europe. Now they're in place in PACOM, and wherever we go after that, eventually we'll swing that transition into that theater and deliver those capabilities.
That is Brigadier General Brian Dravis, the director of the Joint Information Environment Technical Standardization Office at the Defense Information Systems Agency. The other voice you've been hearing this hour is Dave DeVries, the Deputy DoD Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. We've been talking all hour this week about the Defense Department's path toward the Joint Information Environment. And if you missed any of our conversation, we'll post the whole thing. It's actually an extended version compared to what you'll hear over the air at federalnewsradio.com/Jared Serbu. We'll also post links to some of our past coverage of JIE at that same site. But for now, that's going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. Very glad you could join us. Just a reminder, starting this week, we are launching a new program schedule on Federal News Radio. That means this program will now air at 3 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesdays, 3 o'clock Eastern Time on Thursdays, and then the following Monday at 9 o'clock, right after the Federal Drive, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu, brought to you by BAE Systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.